Recording. So good evening, everyone. Again, it's been a challenging with Purim and Pesach. We've had to move around the dates. It's almost, we must have forgotten by now that we usually meet on Thursdays, because I don't remember the last time we had a regular Thursday session, but hopefully I think we should be able to get back to normal soon. So I appreciate, even though most of you I'm sure need to still clean for Pesach and prepare, the fact that we're making sure we keep our consistent Gemara commitment and that we learn our Amud each week is very special. So I thank you for your commitment. And I know there are many people who want to be with us and they hope to watch this recording afterwards. And I appreciate their commitment also to catching up. And that way we could all be Messiah and we can complete the Masechta together. And speaking of Siyumim, we actually did just complete the first parak, the first chapter of Makos last week. So we're not exactly a third in terms of, actually, no, in terms of the pages, I haven't done the math. Maybe that is a third through. What is 24, 23 divided by 3? What does that bring you to about?
Almost 8.
Okay, so we're basically a third way through the Masechta. So that's pretty good. That's major progress, okay? So we're getting there. So this perek we talked about last time. Welcome, Gloria. Welcome, Phyllis. Good to see you all. Let me just, you know, shut the window.
I'm just going to listen because I have work to do in the kitchen.
Okay. Absolutely. Appreciate you coming to listen.
Sorry. Okay.
Very good. Okay. And welcome, Howard, as well. So what we learned last time is that there is something called, as Jeremy termed for us, negligent homicide, which is killing someone b'shogeg. So there are three main categories I want us to think about when we talk about, I guess we use the term murder for lack of a better term, but you'll see why it's imprecise. On the one extreme, there's killing somebody deliberately, premeditated, deliberate. I want to kill this person. It's pretty clear I'm doing it. That's called killing someone b'mezen, absolute murder. Under the right conditions, I receive capital punishment as a result. And then on the other extreme, there is an onis. There is, you know, a huge wind all of a sudden comes and throws me into somebody else. And my, you know, my body gets thrown into that guy and kills him. Completely beyond my control. Complete what we call an onis. That I'm not held accountable for either, because again, it's completely out of my control. But then in the middle, which is what we're going to focus on, is a category called shogeg. That's an important term to write down if you're keeping score. Killing someone but shogeg is, I'm not deliberately murdering somebody, but I was perhaps somewhat negligent. I could have taken more precautions in order to prevent myself from causing that person to die. And we're going to talk about the classic case, which we'll talk about actually later in the class. At the end of this Amud, is if, let's say I'm a lumberjack for a living. I go out to the forest and I am, you know, hitting and whacking at the wood of the tree. So there's actually, we're going to talk about it. It's a dispute as to how to interpret what happens, but I'll tell you the Chachamim's understanding. I take one more whack at the tree, but then all of a sudden the blade comes loose from the hilt of the axe and flies directly in the direction of Reuven, embedding the blade right into his head. He dies on impact. That's it. Done. So in that case over there, I maybe should have been more careful. I should have been made sure that the axe was tightened well to the hilt. It wasn't completely, I should have been swinging maybe in a different direction. I should have taken more precautions. So on the one hand, it's not like it was beyond my control completely. But on the other hand, it wasn't deliberate, premeditated murder. So what happens in that case? In a case of killing b'shogeg, I am sent to the Arei Miklat. I live out my days in a city of refuge until the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, dies. Now, why? That's such a weird term, right? Usually when you get a sentence from a court, there's a certain amount of years. But you don't say until the president's term is over, unless you're getting a pardon, you know, until the next Supreme Court justice dies. That's such an odd way to give almost like a prison sentence. So hold that question. The Gemara will address that, I think, toward the end of this chapter. So we'll bring that back in. So those are three categories. The three main categories are mezen, deliberate murder. The other extreme, ones, completely beyond my control. And then there are shogig, which is I was negligent homicide, was I think the proper term that we use for it. And what we said was, is, well, how do I look at something and know whether it was, you know, enough to qualify for b'shogeg? So what we learned in the Mishnah last time at the beginning of the second chapter was that if I am swinging or I'm making a downward motion, meaning toward the victim, that is something that I should be more careful about. If I'm swinging an axe in the direction of the victim, the to become victim, then I should take some extra precautions, right? It's, you know, like you never put, Zadie, you could inform us, you know, you never point a gun towards somebody. Even if, you know, the safety is on, you know, you don't point a gun towards somebody. So there's certain precautions that you're supposed to take in these kind of professions. However, if I'm swinging the axe upward, which usually means away from the target, then if somehow it still, you know, boomerangs, it hits the guy, that's still too far-fetched. That's not something I was expected to anticipate. So the Gemara starts off by asking, Minahani Mili. So we are on 7b, Zion Amud Beis, three lines from the top at the beginning of the Gemara for those who are keeping score inside. So again, if you want, you could search online, Sefaria Makot 7b. This should come up. Minahani Mili, where do we derive this principle that when one is swinging in a downward motion? Oh, Jeremy, do you have a question? Or okay, I thought you did for a second. Minahani Mili, so where do we learn that a downward motion causes someone to go to Gullus, to exile? Thank you for the safari, David. Amar Shmuel, Damar Kra, Vayipol Alav, Vayamos. It says, and he will bring down upon him. Ad Sheyipol Derech Nefila. So it's pretty explicit in the Pasuk. It uses the word Vayipol, which is Nafal. That means to bring down. So we infer from the Pasuk that specifically when one is striking in a downward motion, that is when someone is expected, again, to be more careful. And thus, if they kill someone, that constitutes murder, bishogig, and sends them to exile. Pretty straightforward there. Now, Tanur Rabbanan, now what we're going to talk about are a number of scenarios that either don't qualify for murder b'shogeg, or I wouldn't have thought they would be included, but the Gemara tells me that this qualifies as killing b'shogeg, and thus would send me to exile. Tanur Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, b'shkaga prat lemezid. So what we're going to do right now, by the way, is we're basically going to take apart words that are found in the Torah in this parsha, and we're going to make inferences and hermeneutical derivations from many of the terms to learn out general principles. So it says in the Torah, bishkaga, shogeg, prat lemezid. That's the exclusion, of course, of someone who kills bemezid. You kill bemezid, then you get capital punishment. You don't go to gullus. Bivli das, prat lemiskavi. And also says that when he killed him, Reuven killed Shimon, he did so bivli das, without das, without knowledge. So prat lemiskavin, to the exclusion, of course, of somebody who has kavana. Kavana is usually a good thing. Here it's a bad thing. Kavana, you deliberately wanted to kill him. In those cases, you don't go to Gullus because the idea of the exile is being an exile serves as a kapara. It serves as an atonement. Remember, that's one of the reasons why Adam Zomamin don't go to exile if they try convicting someone, because they don't need a kapara for accidental murder, that they did something else completely. So here's the thing, though. This is pretty obvious, no? Mezib Shita Barkatalahu. I don't need a pasuk to tell me that if I murdered someone deliberately, I don't go into exile. Because why? I'm supposed to get capital punishment. So of course I'm not going to exile. Why does the pasuk need to tell me that? Ela Marava Ema Prat Laomer Mutter. It's the exclusion of someone who said, if Reuven killed Shimon, but Reuven thought for whatever reason, you know, Reuven's like, oh, you know what? There's like a bounty on Shimon's head. He's maybe, you know, those who were there for our Monday night class, maybe he was a Moser. Maybe he thought Shimon was someone who reported other Jews to the government, which you're allowed to kill somebody if he's a Moser. So if someone's a road ape, you're allowed to kill him. So, but here, Reuven was wrong. He was not allowed to kill Shimon. Shimon was just a nice guy in the neighborhood. So I would have thought to say, maybe that's a case of shoging. So it comes along the Gemara and tells me that, no, that's regular murder. If I kill somebody, and because I thought I was allowed to do it, that doesn't qualify for shoging. That's not called accidental murder, because I deliberately meant to kill him. However, Amar Le Abai, Yomar Mutter Anasu, what do you mean? No, this is even less than a shogi. Abai argues the opposite. He says, no, it's less than a shogi. If I thought I was supposed to kill him, I thought I was doing the right thing. I mean, yeah, I meant to kill him, but I'm an honest. I was led to believe that I was supposed to kill him. So Abai says, not only are you not a shogi, you're actually in the opposite extreme, a less severe extreme. You're an honest. It's an ones. It's beyond. It was beyond his, you know, something he could have done. However, Amar Le, Rava responds to Abai and says, Shani Omer, Ha'omer Mutter Karov the Mezidhu. No. If you think that you're supposed to kill someone, but really you're wrong, that's worse than a shogig. That's not an ones. It's even worse than a shogig. It's Karov le Mezid. So what's interesting is you have, you know, remember our two extremes are Mezid, deliberate murder, ones, beyond my ability to stop anything, beyond my control. Abaye thinks when I thought I was mistakenly led to believe I was supposed to kill someone, Abaye thinks it's closer to the ones extreme. Therefore, I'm let off the hook completely. Rava, however, thinks it's karov lemezid. It's almost deliberate murder, so I'm not getting capital punishment, but I'm also not being sent into exile. So here's the question. Let me ask you guys. So I'm not getting capital punishment, as I'm really bad. You know, I'm so bad, but not that bad, right? I almost reached a threshold for being considered a deliberate murderer, but I'm not good enough that I get to be sent into exile. So what, am I just let off scot-free?
How about a good whipping?
Okay, a whipping could be an option, but I'll tell you something else. But I think the Meiri suggests, this is what the Meiri suggests. The Meiri says there are two types of people that get an exemption from going to exile. Now, I don't think we explained this yet, but why do I go into exile to an Ir Mikla, to a city of refuge? What kind of refuge am I being provided? Well, the refuge I'm being provided is that the relatives of the person who I killed, the Goalei Hadam, they have the chance to avenge the blood of their relative who was killed by me. So if I decide to step out of the Ir Miklat, out of the city of refuge, they can swoop in and decapitate me on the spot. So here's the thing. Somebody who they killed somebody, not Bashogig, worse than it. It was close to Mazin, close to deliberate, or even deliberate, and Basedin can't put me to death. Well, I can't run to a city of refuge either. You see, the city of refuge only helps people who killed Bashogig. But if I am worse than a Shogi, if I'm close to deliberate murder, or I deliberately murdered someone and Basedin won't put me to death, then the Goalei Hadam, I could stay inside the city of refuge all day, every day. They could come on in and kill me if they want to. So don't think that you get off scot-free, because you would say, if I want to kill somebody, I should kill him and should, you know, make it the circumstances. That's not quite shogig, but not quite mazid either, and I get off scot-free. Not true. It just means that Ir Miklat will not protect you, and the Goalei Hadam, the avengers of the relatives, can find you anywhere. Jeremy.
My question, Rabbi, is this. Is the revenge killing by the relative, is that acceptable? Is that something essentially, it almost sounds like the Beis Din is sentencing someone to, they're not going to carry out the capital punishment, but the relatives still, if the relatives kill them, then that's okay. Would the relatives then be put before the Beis Din for, they wouldn't. It would be justifiable.
They wouldn't, but the Gemara will debate later on if someone who is a non-relative kills him, will he be held accountable for that? Mm-hmm. So, and then the question also for the relatives is it a mitzvah for them to kill this person? Or do we just say it's mutter, it's permissible for them to kill him? So the Gemara will actually discuss that later, but the relatives, no, they're given a full permission from Beis Din to do this. This is not done through Beis Din, though. It's a very special rule. So it's funny because it's not operating through Beis Din, but at the same time, we don't consider this vigilantism either. They're permitted to do so. And when you think about it, what's going to keep somebody in the Ir Miklat? You know, if they're not being threatened by Goalei Hadam, by these relatives, why would they ever leave? Why would they ever, stay in the Ir Miklat, stay in the city of refuge? So that's an important factor. But we will elaborate on those halachos later on, God willing. So thank you for bringing that up.
I just recalled that there's another way of dealing with somebody that the Beis Din can't kill directly, but or to die, that they lock him up and starve him and then feed him oats and he's going to gorge on that. And then they give him to drink because he's very thirsty and that blows up his stomach. And
yep. So, okay, good. Zadie, I'm glad you're bringing your Sanhedrin knowledge again. Because yes, it talks about Sanhedrin. So in that circumstance, they put him into a kippah. Machnum Sosa la kippah. Which isn't the thing that I wear in my head, but it refers to, again, that kind of prison that you're referring to. They don't really give him such nutritious food. They basically keep him there until he dies. And they make the circumstances so that he doesn't live for too long. So that is true. That is another form of recourse. Okay.
Is another form also a retrial elsewhere? We talked about that last week.
Yeah, we did discuss retrial if he escapes Beis Din. So if he escapes from Israel to diaspora, there's no retrial. But he escapes from diaspora to Israel, we say, Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, Israel's so holy, so we'll retry him because of Tzchusa Shal, what was it? We phrased it as Tzchusa Shal Eretz Yisrael. That's why. Okay, good memory, everyone. I'm glad everyone's bringing in their background knowledge that they have. Baruch Hashem. Let's move on. We're only almost a quarter way down the Amud. Bivli Da, so when it says in the Pasuk that he killed him without knowledge, prat lemiskaven, that's to exclude someone who intentionally murders. But once again, the same question comes up. Miskaven pshita barkatolu. Again, I know already. If I deliberately murder someone, Beis Din actually puts me to death. So what's the chiddush of the pasuk telling me that I do not go to Gullus? Of course I don't go into exile. I'm supposed to be dead right now. Amaraba prat lemiskaven the harigis behemah harigis adam. It's an exclusion that if someone kills an animal, someone kills a person, but he thought he was killing an animal, right? That's what happened with Cain. All right, he thought he was an animal, but it was really Cain. Lenachri of Hargis Yisrael, a non-Jew, but he killed a Jew. And Lenefel of Aharag ben Kayama. And if someone kills a viable human being, but he thought it was a Nefel, he thought that it was someone, a child that wasn't going to live more than 30 days. So in those cases, we would say that, you would have thought that maybe that's considered killing Bishoge because he didn't know the exact identity of who he was killing. He thought maybe it wouldn't have been, it's still pretty bad, don't get me wrong, but he didn't think it was as bad. So we would have thought maybe that's a Shogeg. Maybe he should get to go to Gullus. I'm saying, nope, that's considered deliberate murder. We don't care who you thought the identity of the person was. If you meant to kill them, then you don't get to go to Gullus, and you actually you will not be protected by the exile, by the cities of refuge. Good. Now we're going to go do a lot of very brief hermeneutical derivations from different words that we find in the verse. We just started. We just did two of them. And now the Gemara is going to basically rapid fire shoot a few out. So I'll try to go through them slowly. If you have a question, just keep it in mind. And I'll pause when we're at the end of this section. And I'll take the questions on this part right here. Tana Rabbanan, learning in a Braisa. In Bethesda, it says, if suddenly in the Torah, if suddenly it happens, Prat LeKaren Zavis. This is to exclude a case where, let's say there's a corner imagine, right? Imagine we're looking at a good shalom. So you have Colonial and Strawberry Hill Avenue. So imagine I'm coming up Colonial and you're coming down Strawberry Hill, and that sign outside the shul that says Mazel Tov to so-and-so's bar mitzvah this Shabbos, whatever, is blocking our vision, and we don't see each other. And then we I happen to, a construction worker is holding a pipe or something really sharp. And then they walk right into each other and he impales him just as he rounds the corner. So I would have thought that's a case that's considered shogeg, but comes along the Torah telling me it doesn't qualify as a case of shogeg. And the commentators actually debate, is this a case that is closer to ones, or is it because of it being beyond his control? He wouldn't have known someone was behind the corner. Or maybe it's karav lemezid. Maybe he was being karav lepshia. It was negligence, actually, super negligence on his part, because you're about to round the corner. You should have the presence of mind to maybe check that no one's around that corner before you stick your sword or whatever you have over there and impale the guy. So that shot resonates with me a little bit more, but both opinions are in the commentaries. Below Ava, it says in the Pasuk that he had to have not borne any animosity towards the person that he killed. Prat lisoni, that's the exclusion of someone who, had animosity towards the person he killed. Because if he did, then we assume it wasn't a coincidence that the hilt and the blade on the hilt of that axe just happened to be loose that day. And coincidentally, this guy, Reuven and Shimon, they were fighting over the same seat in shul for 5 years. And coincidentally, the axe comes off the hilt and it hits that one guy who he's been trying to get out of his seat for 5 years. It's a little bit too much of a coincidence. So we say, we don't assume that a sone did it accidentally. Hadafo, it says in the pasuk, Hadafo, Shadachbo Begufo. It says that he pushed him. Even if you accidentally push somebody over with your body, right? Imagine you're at one of these kiddushes. We get all the kiddushes together again. It's post-COVID. And, everyone's elbowing each other for a little bit of that kishka, chalon, and kugel. So, I remember when I was in Kew Garden Hills, there wasn't as much space. And it was like a whole, it wasn't such a bad idea. Separate kiddushim, men on one side, women on the other side. So, at least it created less people on one side of the table. That's what I had growing up a little bit. I don't think that's our minhag here at a good shalom, though. So, imagine like you're elbowing somebody and you're trying to get the chalent and you accidentally knock him over into the huge vat of chalent and he dies. Okay, that's a little gruesome, but you know what I mean. So then that might be considered beshogeg. So don't try this at home. Otherwise, you'll have to.
We haven't had any deaths here so far.
Okay. Well,
we've come close, but not no death.
You'll have to tell me those stories another time.
If you don't succeed at first try, and try again.
Okay, well, hopefully we won't have any casualties here. Hishlich alav, it says in the pasuk, or he'll send upon him. Lahavi yirili sheyutzarach aliyah. This is an important line over here. This is to tell us if I want to, uppercut something. So what do? I bring my fist down in order to build up momentum to bring it up, right? So obviously here, I'm not trying to uppercut somebody, otherwise that'd be deliberate. But if I was bringing the axe and I dip down in order to bring it up, I would have thought to say that maybe that's considered, since the goal is ultimately to do an upward motion, we would classify the action as an upward motion and it wouldn't qualify as shogeg. I would not be sent to exile. However, comes along the pasuk to tell us that even if he means eventually to go upward, if on the way down, I'm doing the downward motion, and I'm like, oh, I just hit the guy, the axe head comes off and embeds itself in that guy's head during my downward motion, we don't look at what your goal was. We look at what the action was that killed him. If that was a downward motion, then that's considered killing b'shogeg, and you get sent into galus. Keep that in mind. The Gemara is going to bring this up again. So again, we don't classify by the goal. We classify by the actual deed that killed him. And since it was a downward motion, you go to Gullus. You go into exile. By the way, I noticed a number of new Hebrew Aramaic terms that are in this chapter here. And I realize I haven't been consistently translating all of them. So if there are any new terms I'm using that the translation is a little bit ambiguous, feel free to let me know. I'm happy to retranslate some of the words so we get used to them.
I have a question. When you're bringing the axe back in order to take a swing and bring it down, mm-hmm. shouldn't you be careful to make sure that there's nobody behind you before you bring that dangerous instrument behind you?
Absolutely. And that's going to be the case of the butcher that we're going to talk about when we get to it a little later on the Yamud. So that's a good question. But yes, the answer is yes, that is true. You should be looking behind you before you bring it down. And we will discuss that precise case. Moving forward in the drashos, belotstia, without any traps, prat lemiskavein letzad zev, aholcholo letzad acher. Or I think actually translated like tzad, like the side, rather. To the exclusion of, let's say, you know, you ever, kind of like, you know, when you play frisbee, if you're someone like me who's a novice and, you know, tries to play ultimate frisbee but doesn't know how to throw a frisbee for the life of him. So, you know, you try to throw it to the right, but then it just goes to the left. And wherever I aim for, it doesn't go in that direction. So let's say I aimed for the right side, right? If I intended for one side and it went to the other, that does not constitute shogeg. Vashir lo tzada, and what's it mean that I wasn't waiting in ambush? Prat lemiskavein lizrok shnayim v'zarak arba. That's the exclusion to exclude someone that if I meant to throw something only two amos, and then what do you know? You know, my workouts have been working. I've been exercising my arm, and I was able to throw it all the way across the field, and it hits that guy in the head and cracks his head open, and he's dead. So, you know, there also, I would think maybe that's considered killing b'shogeg, but it doesn't qualify as killing b'shogeg. Again, you could read it either way. It might mean that it wasn't, it is too low. It doesn't meet the threshold of shogeg, or it's even worse than shogeg. It's karov lipshia, that it's negligence on my part. I should take into account that the ball could have gone further than I intended, and therefore going to exile will not help my case. Finally, one more major drasha. Vasher yavo esreihu bayar. It says in the verse that he and his friend come into the forest together. The pasuk, it sets up the scene. They come into the forest together. They're chopping wood, and then he moves the axe, and the axe then dispatches and heads into that guy's head. So it says they will meet in the forest. Ma ya'ar rishus l'nizik l'mazik l'chanesham. Just as the forest is considered public property, that both the damager and the victim, the damagee, both have permission to go into the public park together. Af kol rishus l'nizik l'mazik l'chanesham. So then, an important condition that we will elaborate on later is that in order for the person, the mazik, the person, the killer, to be held accountable, it had to have been that the victim was permitted to be there to begin with. And also, on the opposite side, let's say the mazik, the killer, had no business being there to begin with. He wasn't permitted on the property. Then it might not qualify for shogeg. It might even be worse than that. So we're assuming that both the nizik and the mazik, both the killer and the victim, have permission to be there. All else was equal. And that's what sets up a scenario for a case of shogeg. If they didn't have any business being there, then they really shouldn't have been there, and this would never have happened. So that's another exclusion from the pasuk. And we'll elaborate on that one later on also. So a lot of these set up the stage, but we will elaborate on a few of these halachos. So let me just take a moment. I'll pause here. Do we have any questions on the drashos that we just made? Okay. Some of these are more intuitive than others, so I just wanted to make sure that they were clear. But it's interesting. Again, every time we say something doesn't qualify as Negligent homicide. Well, not, you know, again, negligent might not be the right word to come to think of it, because we're trying to say it's not complete negligence. It was complete negligence, it wouldn't be shogi, actually. So I need to be more precise on the terminology. But each time we say something doesn't qualify for shogig, is it because it was so bad, it's way above the threshold of shogig? It's almost complete negligence. Or we say it's so much lower than shogig, it doesn't come near the threshold, because how could I ever foreseen, how could I ever anticipated this outcome? Okay.
So Rabbi, what, like, to frame it the way that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if this is helpful, but when you're talking about negligence and some of these examples as to whether something is shogeg or not, or less than, it's almost the foreseeability question. Is it reasonably foreseeable that if I'm sticking my sword out and walking around the corner, that someone might come around the corner and I'm going to impale them? That's reasonably foreseeable. And then when you think about the motion of the axe and the going up and no one's in that direction and the going down, you know, the foreseeability. Whereas if it's more significant than that, it's almost a recklessness standard where I don't really even think about the consequences. I don't care about the consequences, but anyone reasonable looking at it would say there's a good chance this is going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's a good framework. I think that's a good formulation. Would everyone agree with how Jeremy's putting it, or did you have a different takeaway?
I was wondering, there's a term that we lawyers all learn in law school, that a person is required to adhere to the standard of care of a reasonable and prudent person under the circumstances. We learned this in our course on negligence. Would this be a good method of analysis under halacha?
You know, again, I'd have to, I guess, go to law school to understand the full meaning of that phrase, but I think the terms are similar enough. The point I wanted to just make, based on the term that, Jeremy, you shared with us before about negligent homicide, is that if this was complete negligence, it wouldn't be shogeg. Because if it's kar lipshia, if it's complete negligence, you actually, it's not deliberate murder, it's not mazid, based on will put you to death, but you really should have been so careful that the city of refuge won't help you. So we're dealing with here, it's kind of like a more nuanced place where it wasn't complete negligence, but it's something that I should have anticipated to be careful for. So again, you know, I'm not sure if this is the best analogy. I'm just saying this off the cuff, but you know, you point the gun at somebody and you thought you had the safety on the gun, right? See, right? You told me how you pressed in that little safety button over there. So mm-hmm. if you have a gun pointed at somebody, you know, you should have thought, even though you thought maybe the safety was in place, you should have had the presence of mind to realize you shouldn't be pointing a gun at somebody, even if you think it's not loaded, even if you think the safety is on.
You never do that. You're not allowed. That's one of the first rules of safety with gun safety. You never point a gun.
Exactly. So even if you think it's unloaded, you always assume it's loaded. Right.
And that gets to what Mr. Raskin said, which is really, what would a reasonable person do in that situation? A reasonable person would not point a gun, loaded or not, at anything that he or she didn't want to shoot.
Right. So there, that's closer, I think, to negligence. So shogeg is going to be a little less obvious than, like what Mitchell said, that, you know, anyone who went to basic firearm training 101 knows rule number one is you don't point a gun at someone under any circumstances, right, unless he's a threat to you. So, you know, that is just pshia at that point. Okay, let's move on in the Gemara. We got a little ground to cover, but I'm glad that you're all bringing in your gun, your firearm knowledge, your legal knowledge. It's always helpful. It always adds to the class.
I get a bang out of guns.
Very good. Vayimine Rabbi Avomei Rabbi Yochanan Haya Olav Asulam V'Nishmatash Shliva Mitachtav Nafla V'Harga Mahu. So the question is, here's a new scenario. Remember, downward motion sends me to Gullus. Upward motions, I'm off scot-free. So here's the question. Let's say I'm going up a ladder. I'm going up, but my foot presses down on one of the rungs, and the rung comes off at a high velocity and knocks the guy at the bottom of the ladder square in the head and kills him right there on the spot. On the one hand, I'm going up. But on the other hand, I put my foot down as a downward motion. So the Gemara asks, Ki gavna aliyahi o yuridahi? Do we classify my action as an upward action since I'm climbing up a ladder? Or do we view it as a downward action since my foot pressed down and pushed the rung downward? Amarle, kvar nagatabi rishi tzorach aliyah. Wait a minute. Isn't this what we just learned earlier? That it should be classified as a yurida litzorach aliyah. That I'm doing a downward motion. I'm putting my foot down, but in the service of going up. And how do we classify that action? We classify such an action as a yurida, as a downward action. So hence, the mission, don't I already know? We learned earlier that I go to Gullus. That's what we just learned in the Gemara earlier. So shouldn't that be a classic case of a downward motion in the service of an upward motion? And we say we don't care if it's in the service of an upward motion. The goal doesn't matter. The end doesn't matter, but it's the means that matter. And since the means were downward, therefore you go to Gullus, you go to exile for that. However, Isve, we ask based on our Mishnah. At the end of the Mishnah, it said the following. Zehaklal, kol shebederech yiridaso gola. Anything that is in a downward motion sends you to exile. Shelo bederech yiridaso eino gola. But anything that's not in a downward motion does not send you into exile. Shelo bederech yiridaso lasuye mai. Lav lasuye kai gavna. So here's the thing, though. Once the Mishnah told me that only downward motions send me into exile, I can easily infer that anything that's not a downward motion does not send me into exile. So then what was the point of the Mishnah then stating afterwards, anything that's not a downward motion doesn't send you to Gullus? It must be coming to include another case. It's coming to teach me something that would not have been obvious to me. And what's the case that would not have been obvious to me? It must be the case of the ladder, where I push the rung down, where it's ambiguous whether we classify it as an upward or downward motion. And perhaps the Mishnah, by stating that last line, is coming to hint to a case of this ladder. And it's coming to tell me, actually, that I don't go to Gullus. We do classify it as an upward motion. Maybe that's what the Mishnah is coming to tell me. However, he responds, the other rabbi responds, Utameich, based on your reasoning, then what's the first line in the Mishnah referring to? You see, the first line of Kol Shereiderech Yiraso Gola, anything that is in downward motion sends you to Gullus, what is that referring to? Because both phrases or clauses need to be telling me something about the same case. It doesn't make sense that when we say when it's not in a downward motion, you don't go to exile, comes to tell me about the case of the ladder. But then what case are we referring to when the Mishnah says anything that isn't a downward motion does send you to Gullus? We need consistency. They need to be talking about the same case. So rather, what might it be coming to tell us? Elasuye Kotzav. Zaidi, this is what you were referring to before. Maybe it's talking about a case of a butcher. Hang on. The Gemara is going to explain exactly what this means. Hachanami Elasuye Kotzav. Titania. We learned in a Braisa. Kotzav Shahaya Mikatsev. That if a butcher was butchering, Tana Chada, the fun of Chayev L'Achra Pater, we're going to get four permutations here, okay? Four permutations. Tana Chada, one Braisa teaches that if he was swinging his butcher knife, is there a specific term for those? A cleaver. It's probably a cleaver, that's the word. If he's swinging his cleaver in front of him, then he goes to exile. La'achra pater. In the back of him, he does not. V'tana idach la'achra v'chayef l'fan of pater. The other Brisa teaches the exact opposite, that in back of him, he goes to Gullus. In front of him, he does not. V'tana idach mein l'fan of bein la'achra v'chayef. Another Brisa teaches whether it was in front, whether it's in back, he does go. He does go to Gullus. V'tana idach mein l'fan of bein la'achra pater. The other one teaches in front and in back, you don't go to Gullus. What is going on over here? How can there be so much disagreement? So the Gemara says, Lokasha. Actually, they're all in agreement. They're just talking about slightly different scenarios. Kan biyarida shalafanav ba'aliyah shalachrav. The first brisa is talking about a case where you did a yarida in front of you, but you did an upward motion and back. So basically you had the knife like this, went up, then down. So therefore, if you hit someone on the way up, you're putter, you don't go to exile. But if you hit him on the way down, since it's downward, you do go to gullus. And then the other one is kan, the next price, which says the opposite is the reverse. Kan ba'aliyah shalafanav, b'yarida shalakrav. Basically, going like this, where the front is an upward motion. When I get to the back, it's a downward motion, and hence I am chayiv. And then the third one, which says I'm always chayiv, is kan b'yarida shalafanav b'shalakrav. It's referring to a case where I'm doing a yarida in the front, downward in the front, and also downward in the back. That would send me to gullus. And then finally, v'shal acharav. Kan ba'ali yashal afanav v'shal acharav. And the final one, which says I'm always exempt, is referring to a case of where it is always an upward motion in front, or it's referring to an upward motion in the back. It's like this or like this. But basically, they all agree to the same principle, that downward motions send me into exile, upper motions do not send me into exile. So maybe that's what the point is. Why do we bring this all in? If there's one thing we take away, it's that maybe that's what the Mishnah is referring to. So we can't infer any special exceptions for the case of the ladder and the rung shooting down from our Mishnah. So we're left to assume that the case of me shooting the rung down from the ladder is a quintessential case of Yerida Shitzorech Aliyah, a downward motion in the service of going up. And we say, we don't care what your intent was. We don't care if you were trying to go up. The point is, a downward motion is what killed the guy. And therefore, you go to gullus. You go into exile.
I got a problem with that.
Okay.
I've had a lot of experience going up and down ladders over the years.
That's right. We built a sukkah together.
Matter of fact, I got an extension ladder on my property that I use on occasion. When I go up a ladder, I'll put the foot that I'm bringing up to a rung, and it stops on the rung. And then I push up. I'm pushing my body up. I'm not pushing my leg down. I'm not pushing the foot down. So I'm going up, I'm not going down. But when I come down the ladder, then every motion is a downward motion.
Okay, that's right. That
distinction somewhere in my studies.
Right, so that's important. So that's why the Gemara specifies that this ambiguity is only in a case where he's going up the ladder. If he's going down the ladder, then it's unambiguous. It's clearly classified as a downward motion. So I appreciate, Zadie, that you brought that to our attention. That's important to note. Okay, but we need to cover a little ground. We have 15 minutes, so let's just move forward. Lema Ketanoi, maybe actually this dispute, this ambiguity of whether to classify the case of going up the ladder as an upward or downward motion is actually a dispute among Tanaim, an earlier generation of rabbis. The case is, one brisa says that you're chayiv. The other Tanaim say in another brisa that you are exempt. Maybe the basis of their dispute is exactly our question. Maybe one says it's we view it as a downward motion, so you go to gullus. One views it as an upward motion, so you don't go to gullus. Lo, nope. You can't get away that easy. Dukuliyam aliyahi, maybe everyone holds that we classify the case of going up the ladder actually not as a downward motion, but as an upward motion. If so, then what's the basis of their dispute? Wouldn't they both agree you don't go to gullus, you don't go to exile then? Lokasha, kan lezik and kan legullus. One is talking about reparations for damages. The other one is talking about whether he goes to gullus. So if you cause damage to somebody, by going up a ladder and shooting the rung down, when you damage something, we generally don't take your intent into account. Adamud olam, if you destroy something, you are accountable for it. It's not about your intent, it's about the result. But for gullus, as far as meeting the threshold to send you to exile, it does not meet that threshold if you were going upward. So maybe they don't disagree, they're just talking about two different aspects. One song by going to exile. The other is talking about restitution. Ibai Seima, a third approach to understand this disagreement. Havahala Gullus, both are talking about, are referring to whether someone goes into exile. Below Kasha, Ha Disalya, Vadalo Isalya. One is talking about a case where the ladder's rungs were rotting away. There were worms, it was rotting. And the other, and therefore there's negligence there. And Rashi says, by you pushing down, you actually cause the rung to start moving downward. That's a downward motion. But the other case is where it wasn't rotting already, and therefore it would not be a shogeg. You would not be sent to Gullus. And then finally, a very similar suggestion, Bibaisema, Havadlo Isalya. We're not talking about a rotting ladder. Lokash Had Mahadik Vadul Mahadik. One, the Manda Amar, the one who says that you do go to Gullus, you do go to exile. It's talking about where the rungs were not in firmly, and you should have first made sure they were in properly before using the ladder. And the other one's talking about where you had a firm, sturdy ladder, and you couldn't have anticipated that all of a sudden it was going to break on you like that, and therefore you are not held accountable. That brings us to the Mishnah. We're short on time, so only if there's clarification questions. Is there anything unclear about this that I could quickly address? Okay, so let's move on. The next Mishnah, I almost feel like this should have been the Mishnah before, but again, you know, I trust Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Whatever Rabbi Yehuda Anasi chooses, we'll go with that. He knew a lot more than I did. But this Mishnah really gets to the heart of the question of shogeg. If we recall, the quintessential case in the Torah of killing b'shogeg is with two lumberjacks in the forest, and then a mishap occurs. Now, the question is, what exactly is the mishap that occurs? So that actually is a dispute in the Mishnah coming up. Nishman Abarza Mikito Baharak. Let's say the lumberjack is, you know, hacking away, and all of a sudden the blade from the axe dislodges. Well, first it detaches, and then dislodges itself into somebody's head. It flies off the hilt. Baharag. Rebbe Omer Eino Gola. Rebbe says, you do not go to Gullus. That's not considered the case of shogeg. The Chavarim Golad. The Chavarim say, no, that's the quintessential case of going to exile in a scenario like that. The second scenario is Mina Eitz Mitzvakea. Not that the axe itself came apart, but when you hit the tree, a splinter from the tree, a piece of wood came off, and then that piece of wood from the tree hit Shimon and killed him. So Rabbi Omer Gola, that actually is the case of Gullus, that you go to Gullus. But Chavarim Eino Gola, in that case, you do not go to Gullus. Now, what is the basis of their disagreement? So the Gemara gets into that. Tanya, Amar Lehem Rabbi Chacham, Rabbi said to the rabbis, V'chi Nemar V'nashala Barsel Mei Eitzo. Does it say in the Pasuk that the metal came off of its Eitz? Now, by the way, means wood. And it means a tree also. So that's just important to know for this translation. It says, V'nashal abarzel me'atzo, me'atzo. That did it say in the verse that the metal came off of its piece of wood? V'lo nemar, elemina eight. It says in the verse that it came off from the tree. That implies that it wasn't that the metal detached from the hilt, but actually the implication is that actual wood from the tree detached and dislodged. But O Nemar, Eitz Lamata, V'Nemar, Eitz Lamala. If you look in the verse itself, if you have the actual Gemara with you, it's Oz V'Hadar, in the Torah Rashalim, it's number Vav. It says in the Pasuk, I'll read out loud, that he's going Lichros Ha'Eitz, to chop wood, and then V'Nashal Barzal Min Ha'Eitz, and the metal comes from the tree. So he uses a gezeira shava. So he says as follows, that just like the use of eights earlier in the verse referred to the tree itself, the use of eights later in the verse doesn't refer to the wood of the hilt, but it refers to the wood of the tree that dislodged and then buried itself into Shimon's head. So that's his derivation. And I'm Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi, I'm a Rab, Shnei Mikra Echo, Darshav, Nashal Barzman Eitz. Actually, the Chachamim and Rebbe, they're actually disputing how to interpret the very same verse. The difference is, right, it's a funny thing. They're both looking at the exact same set of data, but they come away with two very different conclusions. Rebbe Savar, Yesh Eim Lemesoris, the Yishal Ksiv. Rebbe says, when you look at the word in the Pasuk, we look at how it's written, Nun Shin Lamed. Nun Shin Lamed could be possibly read as, it could spell Nishal, which just grammatically, we're not going to get too much into it because grammar is not my strong suit, but that's P-L. That is, I think, transitive might be the right word for it. It implies basically that he's causing the, that implies more that the wood is coming off the tree. It's causing the wood to separate from the tree. Whereas Rabbanan Savri, Yish Eim Lemikra, that when it comes to hermeneutics, we give preference to how something is read in the Torah. V'nashal Karinan, and we read Nashal, that's Pa'al, that's Binyan Kal. And that implies that the metal came off of the hilt. We're not going to get too much into the grammar, but just trust me on this. So they're both looking at the same sukkim, but they come up with two different conclusions. But Rabbi Yishim Asuras, you're like, but wait a minute. Does Rabbi base things on how it's written in the Torah, not how we read it? But wait a minute. Didn't we learn in Sanhedrin on Dalet Amud Aleph? So Zaidi, all the way at the beginning of Sanhedrin. Amar Rav Yitzchak or Rav Yosef. Amar Rav Yochanan. Rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda, Ben Roetz. Rabbi Shammai, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Akiva. You got like the A-team over here. Like, you know, a lot of major rabbis. Kulhu Sfiriluhu. Yesh Eim LaMikra. All of these rabbis believe that when we darshan, when we do hermeneutics, we give preference to how something is read, not how it is written in the Torah. So how could Rebbe take the position that we base things on how it's written in the Torah? So basically, Rebbe doesn't take this approach, but that's why Hayinu Dekamar Lu V'od. That's why Rebbe had to give us an additional reason of the Gezer Shava we learned before, eights from eights, just like earlier in the verse, it was talking about the wood of the tree, so too, it's talking about the wood of the tree when we're talking about what the murder weapon was. Okay. I'll leave the next section of Gemara until next time. So I just wanted to share one little idea that I found, and we'll pick it up with the rest of the Gemara at the beginning of next session. Oz V'Hadar actually... My printed Gemara puts a little period in there, so that means it's a safe place to end. But I want to share one interesting thing. If you're looking in your Gemara, do you notice it says Yesh Eim LaMikra, Yesh Eim LaMesoras? Now, I was translating it as we give preference to how the word is written in the verse versus we give preference to how the word is pronounced when we're laning it. Now, what does aim mean in Hebrew? Kibud of the aim?
Mother.
Yeah, a mother. That's a very weird way to say, you know, why do we say, it almost translates as, there is motherhood to the words of the Torah. There's motherhood to how we read the Torah. That's a very odd formulation, no?
No.
No, it's not?
Think of giving birth to a child. You're giving birth, as it were, to a word. What it means.
Okay, good. So along your lines, Zadie. Now, again, this is more Hasidish Torah over here, right? It's like Shabbos morning sermon material, even though I'll probably get crucified if I share something like this from the pulpit.
Well, I think our family comes from Lubavitch. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
Shma b'ni musar avicha ba'al titosh torat imecha.
Okay, so along those lines, get ready. So again, this is something I get away with in Thursday night cheer once again, but I get crucified if I share at the pulpit. So that's why it's good to come to these also. You know, I'm preaching to the choir. So, Rav,
Christians.
Right. So Rav Shmuel Alter, who was a Rav in Brooklyn, a Rebbe in Brooklyn. I don't know much about him, but he's quoted here as saying as follows. He quotes a Chazachus Arif, who asks, why do we say Yesh Eim? We should say Yesh Av, father, right? A father sounds more like an authoritative figure. So he says that the Divrei Shul answers Sheha'ein maniko megadas es benav yaldu, so that in a traditional society, a mother nurses and nurtures a child in its early years. And after that, when the child begins to gain more intelligence, the father takes him under his wings to, you know, bring him to the regular Talmud class and to teach him wisdom. So too, the Torah Shebiksav, the written Torah, the books of the Bible, they accompany us in our youth to teach us general principles of the Jewish faith. But then later on, like a father, the Torah Sheva'al Peh, the oral Torah, which is what we're learning, the Gemara, comes to take us, to teach us the profundity that lies beneath the surface of the words of the Torah. And so that's why we say, when we're referring to the words of the written Torah, Yesh Eim LeMikra, we say, we refer to it as motherhood, because it helps us, especially in our earlier years, but the Av, the father who's with the person to educate him in his later years, is what the Talmud refers to. Now, of course, women are more than welcome to learn Gemara, and et cetera, norms have changed, include all that kind of stuff, just as my disclaimer, so I keep my job, but you can see why this doesn't get into the Shabbos morning sermon as easily, but I thought that this was a, you know, Hasidish Torah almost. I don't think he's Hasidic per se, but a nice little drush just to end off the shiur to a phrase that was really odd and stuck out to me. We have 1 to 2 minutes left. Let me just pause. Do we have any unresolved questions on this Amud of Gemara?
I have something that occurred to me, having some experience with chopping down trees.
Oh,
Forward motion would be on a tree that's already been felled, if you want to use an axe to make it into shorter pieces, or if you want to split wood into firewood, you would want to split a log into firewood. But when you want to fell a tree, if you're left-handed, you're going to swing left to right, and if you're right-handed, you're going to swing right to left. What you want to do is you want to cut a V or chop a V into the side of the tree, one lower and one higher, so the tree falls to the lower side.
Right.
What you're going to do is swing up sideways. You're going to swing down sideways. You're going to swing straight across to break up a V and have it come out of the tree.
Right. Oh, so okay. That definitely, you know, I always assumed it was just like, you know, like that, but apparently there's a lot more methods and finesse that could go into it than I assumed. So yeah, Zay, thank you for providing that insight. Okay, Yashar Koach, everyone, it's 9 o'clock. So God willing, we will have Shir next week. And by the way, I don't know if I emailed it yet, but we're going to meet Thursdays at 8 p.m. because Mincha is now going to be after 7 o'clock during the week. So there's no way we'd have to start the Shir in the middle of davening otherwise. So we're going to meet Thursdays at 8 o'clock moving forward for the foreseeable future. All right?
Great. Thank you.
Everyone have a chag kosher v'sameach. Enjoy Pesach. And I'll see you on the Zoom. And then I guess second
Thank you. Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos. Good Yontif.